4 years of living dangerously is the subject of today's discussion by travel adventure author Antonio Graceffo. In this complex and multi-layered report, Antonio takes on his own personal odyssey, a journey that happens in a physical, emotional, and spiritual realm. Good morning, Antonio.
Good morning. How are you today?
We're terrific, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Listen, for a kid from Brooklyn working the stock market, then leaving it all to go to Taiwan with the ultimate goal of spending time in China on the cheap, it's a pretty gutsy decision.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, 9/11 was a real wake-up call. I mean, that was a pretty traumatic event, and it affected me.
And, reading through your article, why don't you just share with our audience, you were at a brokerage house, and you were working the system like we all have. We're all in the ex-New Yorkers as well. And so you just decided you were going to get away from it all. Why don't we start with your break from the stock market?
Sure. Well, basically, you know, I, like everybody else, I'd had dreams since I was a kid. You know, I always wanted to go to the Shaolin Temple. I used to watch the TV show Kung Fu with David Carradine. You know, and I studied martial arts my whole life. I always wanted to go to Shaolin Temple. I'd done my university studies, 4 years of university abroad, and I wanted to go abroad again, and there were so many places I wanted to see, things I wanted to do, and I just realized, you know, if you put those things off forever, they're never going to happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, you suddenly got it all together, closed up everything, packed up your bags, and though your destination was China, you ended up in Taiwan.
That's right. The first step was Taiwan because I really wanted to go to China to Shaolin Temple, but I just thought, you know, going straight from Brooklyn to China would be like going from sea level to the top of Mount Everest. You know, I think you're going to die if you do that, so you have to acclimatize. So I went to Taiwan first, which was really good. I learned a lot of Chinese culture. I was speaking Mandarin fairly fluently by the time I got to China, which was a huge help. And yeah, Taiwan was a good transition. I call it China Light.
Now, is it called Mai Tai, like the drink?
Muay Thai.
Muay Thai, okay. And that's how you started. And you must have a knack for languages, because as I go through this, you were speaking a number of different languages in a relatively short period of time.
Well, I speak about 9 languages, but I was raised non-strictly trilingual. I speak Italian and Spanish,
okay.
Which I've spoken since I was a child.
Well, your parents are originally from Italy?
That's right. Yeah, my parents are from Italy. I grew up with Italian and Spanish. My grandmother also taught me. My first reading language was French, so it made a big difference. And by the time I got to Asia to learn Chinese and Khmer and Thai, it wasn't that difficult.
Right. Okay, so now you get over to, you get to Taiwan, and at some point you stayed at a monastery where everybody kind of shared everything.
Right, that was in Thailand. Yeah,
that was in Thailand, okay.
Right, that was a crazy story. I'd heard about this monk that was living on the border of Thailand and Myanmar, and right. He was doing drug interdiction work for the government. He was a warrior monk. He was teaching Muay Thai, which is the Thai kickboxing. He was teaching that to the young monks living at the monastery, and then they would go ride through the villages and talk to the kids about, you know, not using drugs, and they would fight with the drug dealers when they had to. And so I flew to Thailand to find that monk and to live with him and study with him.
His name was Kru Ba.
That's right, Kru Ba.
Right. And so you say in here that you shared everything, and you mentioned that you're out there doing some work and you come back and you're hungry, and you turned around and you asked them if you could have some of these fried cockroaches. Now, were they actually cockroaches or...
Yeah, they eat fried cockroaches, fried spiders, just all sorts of bugs, crickets. Crickets are really popular. Grub worms, all sorts of things like that. When you're living in the monastery, the only food that you have is that the young monks go begging in the morning, and the hill tribe people give them food, and that's the only food we have. There's no money in the monastery to buy food, and we work on a farm, but all the work that we do on the farm is actually just to get feed for the horses. So all of our food came from begging, and protein was the one thing that you were lacking most. You know, it was very rare that they gave us meat, so when we had bugs or something, that was a real treat.
Right, and you couldn't, you weren't anywhere where you had a little pocket change and could hop down to a 7-Eleven.
Now, a few times when we were riding out to the field, I'd convince them to stop and let me buy something, but then obviously I had to buy for everybody, which right. I didn't mind doing, but it was expensive.
How many people were in this monastery?
About 35.
So it's and what was their background? How did they get into this?
They were mostly from hill tribe families in Thailand and Cambodia, Myanmar, all through Indochina. There are these tribes that originated in Tibet. And in Thailand, these tribes have migrated down. They're living in Thailand, and they are stateless people. They don't have Thai citizenship. They don't have Myanmar citizenship. In Myanmar, the government is actually trying to exterminate them, which forces them over the Thai border. The Thai government doesn't want them, and they're just caught in this horrible limbo. About 2,000 of them were killed in 1 year during the war on drugs.
Well, and so now, here you are. You were learning Chinese in the language of Kung Fu and Buddhism, as you say, and your main ambition now still is to get to China, and you wanted to continue your training at the Sholin Temple.
That's right.
And then you did a book about your experiences in Taiwan.
Right. The book about Taiwan was called Taiwan Days. That hasn't come out yet.
Okay.
The book about Shaolin Temple is out, and that's called The Monk from Brooklyn.
Okay. All right, so then your great leap forward was you made it to mainland China.
That's right. I made it to mainland China. I flew to Henan Province and went to... I just got in a taxi, and I said to him, I want to go to the Shaolin Temple. So he took me to Shaolin, and along the way we stopped and picked up his friend who knew a monk at the Shaolin, and we got there at night. The doors, everything was locked up. It was just like in the movies. It was this big medieval gate, you know, and we just saw a monk passing by. We told him what we wanted to do. He let us in. In the end, I paid a $200 bribe to a monk, and I slept there that night and the next night.
And so this was a start of a new relationship.
It was the start of a new relationship. That monk, after two nights, came to me and said, are you happy here? I said, oh, I'm very happy. He said, okay, great. Do you want to stay for a year? Yeah, I'd love to stay for a year. He said, okay, give me $5,000.
Good Lord.
That's what I said. I said, look, the average income in China is like $60 a month. I'm not giving you, you know, a lifetime of earnings.
So in a sense, it was almost like being back in Wall Street.
It was exactly like that. I kept saying our philosophies are Eastern, but our payment methods are Western.
You know, say, wait a minute. I thought I got away from all this. Now, what you know, are we bringing me back to that? I want to hang out with you guys.
Exactly. Yeah, I came here to learn about poverty, and I found out poverty just makes you a better businessman. But he introduced me to another monk that was willing to take me for $200 a month, which I thought was fair. He gave me room, board, training, everything for $200 a month.
Now, is this your training brother, Mao Tai?
Yeah, then, that was with the monk, and then the monk assigned me a training brother, and that was Miao Hai. And Miao Hai and I, there were two training brothers, Miao Hai and Miao Ping, and the three of us we trained together, we lived together, we shared our food together, everything for months that I was there.
Now, where did they get their money? They're asking you for $200 a month. Where are they getting their money from?
They only had to pay about $14 a month, I believe, for the Chinese students, and their parents would have been either corrupt officials, corrupt police or military, mm-hmm. or occasionally their parents were doctors who had enough money to pay the $12 a month.
Now, were they there to study, or were they going to spend their life there, or were they going to leave and go back into the real world?
The majority of them were just there to study Kung Fu. Very few of them actually become monks. Miao Ping wasn't actually a monk yet, but he lived as a monk, and he's constantly meditating and all this, and I suspect he will become a monk, but of, say, 65 students, there were only two or three who had become monks at that point.
Are you still in touch with them?
No, it's actually impossible to be in touch with them. They don't have email, and they can't read. Actually, a lot of them can't even read Chinese, and I can speak Chinese really well, but I can't write.
Right.
I can't even send them a letter.
Well, it's interesting because I had downloaded the Skype or Skypey, however you say it, onto my computer, and some gal came on one day from China, and I don't know if she was from Shanghai. I can't recall. Anyway, she was a technical type person and studying. And I thought, you know, how bizarre is this? Here you can sit here and just talk to somebody in China for free. But if you don't have access to a computer, of course, you can't do those things.
Yeah, that's it. 'Cause now I keep in touch with all my friends in Cambodia, and it's very easy to use the internet, phone, and things like that. But for China, it's still very difficult. And what's really sad, though, is that if you Google Miao Hai's name, his name is actually on the internet, and there's articles about him, and I get mail for him. People ask me about Miyahi. You know, how did he turn out? How's he doing this and that? And it's just really sad. He's actually, I guess, a minor celebrity in the West, and he doesn't know about it.
Poor fellow. Now, to go on, he said during the SARS epidemic, widespread paranoia swept through China and resulting in a distrust of foreigners. Well, because we're still going through that.
Right. The Chinese government was embarrassed by the fact that the World Health Organization said that SARS was caused by filth and spread by filth. They were embarrassed by that fact, so they told the Chinese people that SARS was actually caused by foreigners. And during national emergencies, the Ministry of Health becomes like a police organization. Any rules that they make have to be followed, otherwise it's a breach of national security. So they began these quarantine procedures, and one of the more common things was that they would just snatch foreigners up off the street and lock them in a hospital or in a hotel and charge them for it.
Well, just briefly, we have about another minute. Just tell us about the crossing of the desert.
I flew to Xinjiang, China, which is up in the Taklamakan Desert, up on the Pakistan border, and I bought a tricycle rickshaw for $36, and I filled it up with water and food, and I rode about 550 kilometers across the desert.
And then you bought an odd-looking tricycle.
That's right. It's a tricycle rickshaw. It's like a rickshaw that you can pedal.
All right, and then you began to write. Right, you started to write in earnest, and you decided, I guess, that maybe writing was where you were headed?
That's it, yeah. At that point, once I came back from Xinjiang, from the desert, then I started publishing, and the stories about Shaolin were bought up pretty quickly by magazines, and then the desert stories, and then that was it. I just didn't want to go back to a regular job anymore, and I went to Thailand and did all my adventures in Taiwan. Then I went back to Taiwan and did an adventure book at that point.
And I love the title of your first book, The Monk from Brooklyn.
It says it all.
That sure does say it all. Well, for those listening, all of this information and this article can be found on our website, ttrn.com, where you can read it more in depth. A very, very interesting story. And, Antonio, we thank you for sharing with this all with us, and we hope... I'm kind of losing my voice here. I'm fighting a cold. We hope to be talking to you again soon.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Bye for now.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.